Welcome to the Ian Bousfield Experience. I'm glad you're here. This series of podcasts are just things that come up in my mind when I'm thinking about playing, when I'm thinking about teaching, and general thoughts about music. There's some things here that I hope you'll find really useful. And don't forget, if you've got any comments or if there's anything you want to discuss further, go to ianbousfield.com. Hello. I've thought long and hard as to whether I should actually record the thoughts, the feelings that you are about to hear, because there's so much negativity around in the world at the moment for obvious reasons. And I didn't want to make your days worse than they perhaps already are, as musicians were all suffering so badly in so many different ways. However, I did want to grasp the nettle, as we say, to discuss the existential crisis that I think on a world level we as musicians are facing. In the last few days, what kind of brought this to a head is I've been speaking to friends all over the world who all seem to be saying the same things to me. I think we're all suffering. And it's quite reasonable to say, well, this existential crisis is perfectly reasonable. Of course, we're going to be suffering and we have to go through what we have to go through right now. But I'd just like to go through a few of the my feelings over the last year. I think we're all going through different feelings and different stages of emotion. This time last year, I was just looking to finish up the Aries Quartet CD, and there was news of this virus in China that was coming along, and it was starting to get bad in northern Italy. And my kids got a really bad virus where they had a fever for a week and were coughing like crazy. We're attached to northern Italy here, you know. At that time, though, apparently there was no virus in Switzerland. I think with hindsight, we can quite clearly say what that was. My initial reaction, in Austrian, they call this Bauernwissenschaft, I think, you know, the farmer's knowledge, like gut instinct. My initial reaction was like, everybody go home. Close the borders, stop all flights to and from anywhere that's got this bloody virus. And now, everybody go home. And it was wait, delay, you know, thousands of flights going all over the world. And well, the rest is history. They then followed the inevitable lockdown. And which I have to say, I think we all, well, many of us, those of us without immediate financial peril, accepted with quite a deal of euphoria for the first time in our lives. Hey, I had weekends. I went walking in the mountains. I met my daughter from school. And we discovered the delights of distance learning. And they, you know, that's been a huge win in this situation. I am probably at the moment in contact with about 20 different trombone players every day, trying to help them, trying to guide them. And it's a difficult, sort of new way of living or working. I don't carry around the worries and the problems of those people too much, whilst at the same time trying to help them, you know? And, you know, then it was like, hey, okay, that was cool. 3 months, lovely. Now, can we start again? Because you told us that, you know, we needed to go home to break this. We just need to flatten the curve and then it's not going to be long. You're going to be home for 3 months and then I don't need to remind you what happened then. 1 year later, we're back in the same place. So over the summer, I did manage to do a little bit of work, and I have to say, credit to Switzerland, they really tried to keep as much as possible everything open. whilst keeping an eye on numbers. And then it was like everyone was saying, oh, the poor students, they have no incentive. Oh, there's someone. It's like, hey, now how do I say this without using four letter words? Hey guys, go home, practice, toughen up. This is amazing. This is the one time in your life you're gonna summer. Bloody practice, get fit, enjoy being out in the countryside. Fix all of those problems. That was my advice to others. I didn't actually do that myself. There are some problems in my playing I've long given up on. And now I'm going to do something quite unusual that I don't normally do. In my podcast, I'm going to insert an edit. And the acoustic will be different because I've changed location, because we're very fortunate. In Switzerland, I am now right up in the mountains and going to go snowshoeing. So yes, it's all right for some. Yes, I am lucky. I do realize how damned fortunate we are here. I think yesterday, because this podcast was so potentially touching on some raw nerves, I decided to send it preemptively to a really wonderful person called Ian Moffat in London, and to get his feedback. And he wrote and listened, and he said, let's face it, I'm sure that the majority of your audience know that you're an opinionated SOB. If you weren't, the content would be much less interesting. I guess that's one of the problems with having opinions, isn't it? Anyway, I really do want to clear something up, which he raised, which is when I said, get out, go practice, go and get yourself fit. I was really relating solely to those months in the summer when we were free, freer than we are now. We could get outside and we could practice. And life appeared as it may possibly have been going back to normal. So if I offend anybody with my opinions that are well thought through, I kind of think that's par for the course doing these podcasts. But in that case, I absolutely want to make that clear. I had students, I know people in the first lockdown in spring of 2020 who were locked in a box and they couldn't practice. Spanish people who were avid mountain bikers, could see the mountains, weren't going to encounter anybody else all day and were not allowed to go out and mountain bike. People stuck in apartments where the police, if they went out on the street, would be fined, and the police were outside their apartments playing football, almost taunting them. So this is in no way aimed at that situation. People suffered terribly last spring. I'm afraid to say I think the situation is worse now, and I have grave concerns for many, many people. Anyway, I ramble, but I just wanted to make that very, very clear. This go practice, go get fit was very much relating to, you know, feeling sorry for ourselves last summer. So anyway, I've cleared that up. I'm sure you'll understand. Anybody who's ever had a relationship with anybody will know that words are really not a very good way of communicating, but it's the only way we've got, unfortunately. Anyway, and now back to the rest of the podcast. And then it was like September, well, okay, here we go, let's get going again. But by September, there was this growing feeling of, hey, my profession, my family, my musical family is being trashed. What has been built up since the beginning of human evolution, a part of the human disposition, a part of what it is to be a human being, is being turned off. It's being rubbed out. The arts and music from the very first cave paintings have been a constant accompaniment to human beings. And with almost total nonchalant disregard, it's being turned off. No apologies, no attempts to try and keep it going in many countries. In many countries. I have to say, huge exception. And again, doffing my hat, congratulating Scandinavia. They, of all people, I think, realized that. And they bloody did everything they could. I mean, in Aalborg, they bought a bus that could like turn into a like a converted stage. You could drive it outside an old folks home or a school or whatever in the summer and play chamber concerts for them. You know, so I'm speaking very broadly. I think a lot of us, you know, it's not that everywhere, but it is in 90% of the world. It's just like, okay, go home. And I stand corrected, but apart from, I don't think even in the world wars, the concerts continued. And there was an immediate threat. A very immediate threat. So he was like, okay, I could start to see in the eyes of students, of colleagues, like, hang on, what's happening here? Hearing stories of freelancers in London, people in West End shows, driving delivery trucks. Okay, fine, fine, okay, fine. We all have to do whatever we have to do. I think at this point, I think it's really important to state that it is possible to believe in an extremely serious and deadly virus. That's goes without saying. Anybody, I believe there are some people who do not recognize the existence of this virus. They are clinically insane. It is there. There's no question about it. We have a problem, a big one. It is also at the same time possible to believe that perhaps some areas of the world or politics are using this as a way of pushing through a certain agenda. I don't know what it is, but that's also possible to believe that and believe in the virus. It's also possible to believe in the utter human incompetence of politicians who are out of their depth. And that might sound like a really bad thing to say about politicians. I guess you can kind of understand it. When they signed up to be politicians, they weren't planning on this and they weren't preparing for this. Perhaps you should say they should have been, but we weren't ready for this. So I've seen this, you know, it's like we go through the existential crisis of like, what's happening to our profession? You know, there are certain people now turning their backs on it and saying they're never going to go back. And then the experience that you have, everyone speaks from their own perspective is what I'm learning. If you ask a young person right now, they're going to be saying, hey, my future's been destroyed. For goodness sake, can we open the things up and start again? I don't just mean musicians. I mean, in any young person, it's like, hey, I've sat at home for a year and you know, the world economy is being utterly destroyed. And, you know, you want me to pay for this now for the rest of my life? And is there any chance we can? And you have to understand that. At the same time as you have to understand the pensioner. I know there are a lot of them who've worked out how to use Facebook, who have made their money, had their careers, and have their pensions. Their money hasn't gone down 1% in the last year, stayed exactly the same. In fact, if they had money on the stock market, they'd done really well out of the last year. But are the ones who are in most in danger and the ones that we absolutely must protect and absolutely, you know, have to do everything for them. But they're the ones saying, lockdown, lockdown, lockdown. And you've got to understand it, you know, saying, you know, young idiots, their lives are in danger. And so it's such a difficult thing to balance because the two sides of it are actually quite reasonable. I'll give you another example of someone, a friend. Although I now use that term lightly, you're about to hear why. Who is very big in business and for the last year has worked from home. That's brilliant. She doesn't have to get on the train to Zurich every day. She can work from home. It's fantastic. And while during the second lockdown now, she just bought a $2 million house, a And Moni didn't go down at all. She's in great shape. She can do it all from home. And she said that this was a character building experience for musicians and would bring out the best in us. And when I said, but there are people selling their instruments so they can survive. And this was going to be the turning point in their life. It was going to find out what they were really made of. Because she was worried that her mum was going to get it and die. So it's it's all understandable, isn't it, really? But I did actually hear that. And those of you who know me quite well will know that I was having to bite my tongue very hard at that point. So I think we've all gone through this phase of depression, being depressed about, you know, what's happening to our profession and how it's going to pan out. Because right now we don't know whether we're going to have a series of mutations in this virus. It's going to go for the next 5 years. We don't know. But I guess gradually, and this is why I wanted to do this podcast, is because that depression is now turning to anger, I believe. Not that anyone's going to listen to us. But the uncertainty that the depression is now changing to, how are we going to go back to doing concerts for people who right now do not give a damn that people are having to sell their bloody instruments to pay for food? How are we going to go and do concerts with politicians sitting on the front row smiling at the jewel in the crown of their country's orchestra, having mercilessly shut us down with no hope? Particularly as there are so many now university peer-reviewed studies that says that the transmission of the virus in concert halls is practically nil. That track and trace app that actually was in the New Zürcher newspaper, a major newspaper in Switzerland last week, that track and trace app was running for 6 months last year through concerts. It pinged once in 6 months. The result, they closed the concert halls. So that anger is growing. How are we going to deal with this? And I had this kind of existential crisis of, do I want to go back to doing this? This is all I've known. With people like us, if you leave a vacuum, we'll fill it. And I'm filling the vacuum. I am busy all day, every day, not just doing things like this. And I'm excited about it. There's so many new things happening in my life. You have to make them happen, but I'm so excited about it. How do I feel? I'm going to quote Carol Jarvis. The wonderful Carol Jarvis. I was talking to her a while ago and she said, I honestly don't know how I'm going to find the time to go back to doing concerts when this is all over. And I think a lot of us are feeling like that. And then I had this terrible feeling of that I was in breach of contract. I was in breach of contract with this. I'm touching my trombone. And I'm almost tearing up to say this, to think, to even, almost overnight, to be thinking, am I going to turn my back on this thing? Am I going to walk away from the only thing that I wanted to do since I was 7 years old? Am I in breach of contract to my, sadly now no longer with us, parents, who supported me so much? How can I turn my back and walk away from this? And I had a chat with my dad in my head. Say, look, I don't know how I feel about this kind of thing. And then I realized that when I started playing the trombone when I was 7, I didn't do it for other people. I did it for me. And as much as one loves adulation. I only ever have done it really for me. Sounds a bit selfish, doesn't it? I have communicated and expressed things to other people because it's what I love doing. And I'm reminded of a wonderful baseball coaching, now basketball, I beg your pardon. Yeah, they're all the same, aren't they? Baseball, basketball, American football, I don't know. European view on American sports. It was a basketball coach who was one of the first black basketball coaches. And the owner of the club had been openly racist about some of his players. And he called the team together who were ready to refuse to play. There are some parallels here because we are being damaged by people who don't care about us. And he called the team together and he said, from being a child, I had dreams and aspirations. How I wanted to play. How I wanted to play my best, how I wanted to be the best. And at not one point in any of those dreams did that man appear. And I realized that that was the hope, that was the most important thing for me, for us, right now. And that is this situation and politicians who don't care about music or the arts, never appeared in any of my dreams. And they still don't. So that was like, well, you know what? I do this because it's what I love to do. Now, and I realized, I had the realization that whatever, I am never going to stop playing the trombone. Whilst I have breath in my body to play the trombone, I will do it because I love it. And that, I think, is the way forwards as ever in life. The answer, they tell us, is love. And in this case, it's love of what we do. And it's love of our family. Because the suffering of a musician on the other side of the world is a suffering for all of us. We all feel it. I'm also now having different feelings about trombone festivals. It almost feels like, well, you know, if people don't really want to listen to what we're doing, if it's not that important to us, well, we have to act. If it's not that important to them, well, first of all, we have to question why. What we have done to become less important in society. But if that is the case, well, then we'll stay within our family. I'll go and play for other trombonists. And I'll try and invest my time trying to inspire as many young people all over the world to take up the trombone. And that's fine. That leads us on to another subject, though, of how do I feel as a teacher? How do I feel as an educator? Now, any of you who are passionate teachers out there will know that we're not really teaching trombonists, we're teaching human beings to think with an open mind and to develop and grow as human beings. And in case you were wondering, I have an 8-year-old boy and I am teaching him to play the trombone. He's following in my footsteps. And it's apart from him having possibly the most natural embouchure setup I've ever seen, which is a reason enough to continue with it. And given the fact that my father-in-law is an extremely famous musician, so he's got some decent genes. It's the effect it's having on him as a person. It's the effect it's having on his self-confidence on his ability to learn and find solutions and to persevere. You've heard it all before. So is it doubting my desire to teach? No, not 1%, no. And I'll be honest, as seeing young players struggling with the situation at the moment, in some cases literally suffering with clinical depression, no one said to me yet, they're not sure whether they want to do this. So that is the tiny seed that is going to grow us out of this, and we will come out of this. But I think we need to look at what is it that we have done to take us out of the center part of society. Have we bombarded our audience with too much music that they don't want to listen to? Have concert goers who enjoyed very much the overture, piano concerto, symphony format decided to vote with their feet and stay at home because they don't like Xenakis or Haas? Well, there may be a bit of that. Both of those composers that I mentioned, Georg Friedrich Haas and Xenakis, are brilliant people and brilliant composers. And wow, it's great art, absolutely. But it is a bit of an acquired taste, one has to say. And, you know, certainly in so many countries, it's like you're not going to get your government subsidy unless you show us your new music policy for each season. Nothing wrong with that. Fantastic. But I think it is an open question in the room. Is, hang on, have we driven people away? What have we done? And it might be time now to open the question of orchestras' education policies. We were told in the early 80s to mid 80s that if we didn't do something about education, we'd lose our position in society and our audience would disappear. So I think in the UK, orchestras haven't been able to get any funding unless they've had an education department. That hasn't worked either. That's not helping us either, is it? People don't seem to be caring. Audience numbers are not going up. They were probably going down. So I am not criticizing that. I've been part of the education projects, and you can see that it's coming from an extremely good place and is extremely, you know, well thought through. But we have to look. At some point, we have to put all the results of this stuff. We're not talking about 5 years now, we're talking about 35 years, and put those results on the table and say, look, what worked? What's worked? What hasn't worked? How do we need to adapt? This is a big time to change. What can we do? So I guess that's where I am with it. It's going to force us into reassessing everything, I think. And I think as musicians, we're going to have to get our head around these issues. How do we feel about this? I think that if this, one can only assume, hoping for the goodwill of humanity, that this is, what's happening is absolutely necessary, even though the university research is saying, you know, maybe it's legitimate to say, well, hey, people are going to go on public transport to concerts and spread it that way. It's quite possible. I mean, I know Angela Merkel in Germany to be an extremely cultured fan and supporter of classical music and opera because she sat in rehearsals in Vienna and went into the canteen, didn't really speak to anyone, got a coffee and sat down on her own as a normal, unassuming person. Didn't want to make a big fuss by going to the concert, so she came and listened to the rehearsals. And you thought, wow, I think a few other countries could do with a leader like that. But she nevertheless is following the same line of closing everything down. So one has to assume that what is happening is necessary. I feel all of my fellow musicians' pain, but I do feel that the way out of this is through reassessing what it is that we do, rekindling, reminding ourselves of the love that we have for what we do, and the belief in the change that education, music education, makes, the effect it has on young people, and the absolute utter belief that music and the arts is part of the human disposition. And when this is over, that's when the fight starts to re-establish our rightful position in society. So there you go. I hope you enjoyed that. If there are any issues that you found particularly interesting, don't forget to contact me, and always go to ianbousfield.com for lots more interesting stuff.